It's Light the Tower, your daily look around the world of sports with Horns 24/7 insider Jeff Howe on your live, local, and independent home for sports talk in Austin, The Horn.
Yes, first show of the month of August for us here at Light the Tower on The Horn, live, local, and digital on The Horn app and at hornfm.com. Jeff Howe, Snoop Daniel, no Craig Way. We've lost our way. We got to make it another week. Well, we're already half a show down to it. Half a show down. Four and a half to go before Craig is back with us. And, you know, we'll see about filling out the, I'll go through the Rolodex, see who we can get in here the rest of the week to help us pass the time. But we've got a lot of big stuff coming up this week. Snoop, again, Texas reports on Thursday. The first practice, fall practice of the Steve Sarkisian era is on Friday. We've got high school football throughout the week to talk about. We'll see if anything of relevance or significance pops up in what's now going to be, well, when Texas and Oklahoma, they're going, it's just a matter of when now, and that's going to be decided behind closed doors in a boardroom somewhere with a lot of lawyers getting paid a lot of money to do their thing. So if something of significance pops up on that front, we'll get to that. But other than that, I mean, not a lot of time to BS this week, Snoop. Got a lot of pertinent stuff to get to.
One quick thing in high school, the Glenn head coach, he abruptly retired like Thursday of last week.
Yeah, so I saw you talking about that. So what's the deal? What's the deal there?
Well, Rob Schoenfeld, it was a family issue, and he decided to step down, you know, just 4 weeks before the season. They elevated the defensive coordinator, but anytime you lose your head guy that close to the beginning of the year, I would think it's jarring. I don't know. He's been their only head coach, athletic coordinator. So, you know, you just never know.
Yeah. Did all the vacancies, I guess, Snoop get filled?
All inside Elevation.
Okay.
With the exception of Cedar Park. They were the only person who went at the outside to get the Red Oak coach to bring in, but everybody else just elevated.
Yeah. Okay. Well, good. So, again, we mentioned at the top, Snoop was planning to be at Hayes and Bowie this morning, as all high schools who did not go through spring practice could start practice today. The plan for a lot of them was to start bright and early this morning. It was Snoop's plan. Snoop set that alarm for 5:05. I'm proud that Snoop set the alarm that early and got up and was ready and raring to go. But Mother Nature had other ideas, so Snoop, no trip to Hayes. Well, you did go to Hayes. And
I had to post a picture of like nothing happening just to prove that I went.
Just to prove that you went. So Snoop did go to Hayes, didn't make it to Bowie, but you'll be at both of those places visiting the Hawks and the Bulldogs before all is said and done. Tentatively, you're scheduled to be at Crockett and LBJ this afternoon.
Yes.
What are the schools you plan on hitting this week?
For sure, Maynard, Hendrickson. After that, I don't know. I went to like 30 schools like during spring camp, so I'm trying to show volleyball some love. So I'm not going to do a bunch of volleyball talk on here because I know our P1s aren't interested.
But that's okay. But we are the high school sports show of record on the Horn. So if you want to talk volleyball, Snoop, I'll give you the floor.
I'll keep it to a minimum.
You've got about,
if I ever do.
I'll give you like 10 seconds right now if you want to shout out a volleyball program, where you're going, where you've been, whatever.
Dripping Springs. And I know it's a little outside of the Austin contingent, but as far as Division I volleyball, they are sending girls left and right. Mackenzie Plante just verbally committed to Tennessee, and they have a West Virginia commit in Maddie Lund. So I think they have a good shot at winning state this year. That's it.
Hey, the Dirty Drip is not out of our coverage area.
No,
sir.
I know. But they play like those – they're in that weird district where they play like Canyon and – San Antonio Veterans Memorial. It feels a little disconjointed to me.
Yeah.
But whatever.
A lot of quarterback talk on the show today. I mentioned our last report at Horns 24/7, kind of wrapping up off-season workouts, summer workouts for the Longhorns, about where things stand between Casey Thompson and Hudson Card. And it's pretty much in the same spot where it was when those two exited spring practice. It's going to be decided on the practice field. Nothing, it seems like, of significance, at least that we've gathered, really separated those guys, one from the other, over the summer. So now it's going to be decided when the Longhorns get going on Friday. I'll get to the Quinn Ewers stuff here in just a second, because there's another layer to that that I know Snoop has a little bit of expertise in. And when I say Snoop's expertise, I'm not talking about COVID anal swabs. There are areas where Snoop is very where Snoop can speak from an intelligent standpoint. Am I joking? But this is it's getting interesting, Snoop, for Sam Ellinger in Indianapolis. As we know, the Carson Wentz injury situation, as we talked about, you know, this all happened last Friday when Mike Roach was in studio with us. And by the way, Mike is on vacation now, but he did post the Stampede, our weekly collection of insider news notes and nuggets from the recruiting trail. Okay, and it's popping up right now that Carson Wentz will undergo foot surgery. He's expected to miss 5 to 12 weeks. That news of the foot issue with Carson Wentz popped up when Mike was in with us on Friday, and we started talking about, hey, man, what does this mean for Sam Ellinger? Well, apparently, according to Jim Aiello of the Indianapolis Star, who is their Colts insider, Frank Reich says the Colts are confident in the quarterback room that they have. He told Jacob Eason, quote, it's your show. So we went into the offseason thinking, hey, Sam Ellinger's got a chance to go compete with Jacob Eason to be the backup to Carson Wentz. Snoop, there's a real chance that the Colts don't do it. It doesn't appear that they're going to make any kind of roster move in terms of acquiring a veteran. There's a realistic chance Sam Ellinger starts for the Colts as a rookie. Like, the odds are better than zero that happens. So we knew when he was drafted that, hey, if he's going to go to a place where he's got the chance to play early, getting drafted by the Colts might be the best thing for him. And lo and behold, you've got a Carson Wentz foot injury. Frank Reich is rolling with the two guys he has. So I'm going to go ahead and guess that a lot of Longhorn fans are going to be much more invested in Indianapolis Colts preseason games this year than at any point in time in history. Okay, so somebody on the text line saying, the Colts signed Brett Hundley, which, okay, you signed Brett Hundley. You brought in a veteran, but that shouldn't do a whole lot for you. So, but the bottom line is, if you're a Longhorn fan, tune into a Colts preseason game, because that might be a pretty decent audition for Sam Ellinger. So we'll see. And again, like, okay, Brett Hundley is the kind of veteran I'm talking about. You're bringing in a guy that's been around the league for a little bit, but you're not making any kind of deal. Like, you're not suddenly like, oh, hey, we're in the Deshaun Watson conversation if you're the Colts. That's not where the Colts are going with this. Carson Wentz will be back in 5 to 12 weeks. But, yeah, Sam Ellinger, his chance to prove himself to that organization is going to come a lot sooner than maybe some people thought due to the injury to Carson Wentz. Let's talk about the Quinn Ewers thing. If you're just tuning in, this broke not all that long ago. I'm looking at the report right now on the 24/7 sports side of things from Bucknuts.com. Quinn Ewers is reclassifying to the class of 2021. He'll be a member of the Ohio State program for fall camp, which Ohio State gets practice started tomorrow. A source with knowledge of the situation confirmed to Bucknuts that Ewers is at Ohio State, so he's in Columbus right now. This comes after he elected to finish his high school career early, reclassify, and enroll at Ohio State in time for the 2021 season instead of enrolling early prior to the 2022 season. Was expected to be a January enrollee. Now he's going to be with the Buckeyes for camp. And Snoop, this brings up a really interesting point with name, image, and likeness, because I was thinking about that. I saw it was Dan Wetzel. It was a Yahoo Sports story. And I started thinking about it from this standpoint. Like, this is where, when we talk about name, image, and likeness, we focus on, you know, the big sports, football, men's basketball, even college baseball to a certain extent. Like, a guy like Ivan Melendez coming back to Texas, you know, I know he, right after he announced he was coming back, the announcement came out of his name, image, and likeness deal with Last Dan Hats and everything. You know, Mike signed a couple of NIL deals his company has with some UT athletes. But Ivan Melendez, bottom line, he's going to be able to make money. And NIL is a game changer for Texas on the baseball front, because whereas Vanderbilt and other schools, specifically private schools, have been able to have more money to get to guys and money that hasn't been there for Texas guys. We could go down that whole rabbit hole of why there hasn't been money in Texas, but when you've got a student enrollment of 50,000 and there's just not a lot of aid to go around, name, image, and likeness now can help Texas make up the difference on the baseball front. So we focus on it from that standpoint. But I started thinking of name, image, and likeness too, like SUNY Lee, the who's gonna go, she's going to Auburn. I didn't know this until last night. I saw this. The women's all around champion in gymnastics. She's gonna make name, image, and likeness money at Auburn. That's probably gonna be close to, if not over, seven figures. Because once you're the Olympic all around champion, that puts you in a different money making stratosphere, and that's money she can make while competing at Auburn. So good for her if she can get it. But the one entity that, for a lot of reasons, it's because of the way the law is written in the state of Texas. Like, a lot of these laws were written the way they were written for college kids to take advantage of it. But, and this is part of the thing that, you know, is going to need to be revisited, is my understanding is, and Mike Roach, when Mike was in studio with us last Friday, he was part of at the UIL press conference where this was being discussed. This was part of the press conference I missed. I think because Craig and I were doing the show while that was going on. I don't remember what happened, but, or maybe that was Sunday when I got there late. I don't remember. Regardless, I digress. But the UIL is basically saying, yeah, NIL deals for high school athletes can't happen. That is really the crux of what started this with the Quinn Ewers talk of enrolling early, is if he gets to Columbus now, he's apparently got NIL deals on the table that are going to pay him over seven figures. So, Snoop, this isn't the first time, because we've seen other guys opt out or whatever, or enroll early, make decisions for themselves. This isn't the first situation we've seen happen. It's damn sure not going to be the last. So I don't know if, I guess I'm a little out of my depth from this standpoint. I don't know if the law is specifically written like that, or if this is the way the UIL is interpreting it, but something's going to have to happen. Something's going to have to give at some point, because otherwise we're going to see it in, who's to say, Snoop, you can't see it in volleyball, or you would definitely see it, you know, boys basketball is one where you could definitely see it. Maybe you see it in girls basketball. This isn't the last time is going
to
come up.
It kind of happens in soccer, because the soccer players quit playing high school ball to go play club. So kind of in a way, you know, they just aren't caring about high school. It's lessening the value to these kids of high school athletics.
I've heard about that. Does that happen in volleyball? I've heard about that happening in volleyball, like incidents where that's happened in volleyball. But you're telling me soccer?
No, it's soccer, yes.
Soccer's where it's really prevalent.
A lot of girls do it. No, like they quit high school and they go off the club and never come back.
That's sad to see. But this is something that I don't know if it's the UIL is just interpreting the rule that way, or that's the way the name, image, and likeness law is written in the state of Texas, that you can't compensate high school kids. But, you know, and I'm not trying to promote anything nefarious happening, but Snoop, what's the difference? To me, I don't really see the difference between, you know, somebody, a high school athlete, being able to profit off their name, image, and likeness, and working, you know, that old infamous story, working the summer job where you're paid to cut grass at the AstroTurf field. Like, I don't really see the difference between either one of those, right? So I don't know. I think the quicker the UIL, I don't know if that's a UIL issue, if it's a state legislative issue. I don't know where the issue resides, but it's something that's got to get figured out pretty quick. Otherwise, this Quinn Ewers deal, it's going to be the start of this happening across multiple sports. Where, and you know what the truth is, Snoop? I said it's sad, but I'm not going to fall again. Look, if you're going to go get life-changing money as a 17 or 18-year-old, go ahead and make it happen. You know, we don't fault the 13-year-old genius who's at MIT and then has a six-figure job at 16. We don't fault them for that. I don't know why we should fault Quinn Ewers for making the decision. If you're a fan of high school football in the state, it sucks. If you're Riley Dodge, the head coach at South Lake Carroll, you're definitely not happy with it. If you're anybody who follows that program, you're not happy with it. If you're any of his teammates, you're probably not happy with it, because you're trying to get back to that point of being in a position to win a state championship that maybe you're not going to be in with Quinn Ewers moving on. But all of that said, I'm not going to fault anybody for go getting the money. That's why I think this has got to be an issue. I know the UIL has looked at it. I know they're taking it seriously, but man, something's got to start happening on their end to allow kids to profit off a name, image, and likeness. Otherwise, we're just, this is just the domino effect. This is going to continue to happen at a pretty steady clip with athletes that have that kind of leverage to be able to do something like this. So
there's the Mikey Williams kid. Have you heard of him? The basketball player?
Yeah, the basketball player, yeah.
I don't know like what the specifics are, but he's already about to make a grip of bread.
Yeah, Mikey Williams is one that I've seen. He's going to have NIL deals well over $1 million. So it's a different time, and everybody's kind of got to wrap their heads around it, that with name, image, and likeness, with the good, and I'm all for college student-athletes getting paid, with the good, this is going to be some of the consequences that come from that, unless folks like the UIL can see what they can do to maybe help alleviate some of this, because their constituents, high school football coaches in this state, high school basketball coaches and soccer coaches and volleyball coaches, they and the remaining student athletes in that program, they're the ones who really have to suffer through all of this. So
there's three states that prevent high schoolers from doing this, mm-hmm. and it's Illinois, Mississippi, and Texas.
Okay. So those are the three. So if you're saying that, Snoop, based off your research, then that's the way the law is written in the state. So that's not even something. So basically it's out of the UIL's hands at that point, right? If that's the way the law is written, it's out of their hands. So I don't know. Maybe somebody flubbed something up or thought they were looking out for kids' best interest and it just went awry. But again, said it before, say it again, at the risk of repeating myself, Quinn Ewers is not the first athlete this has happened to, and he definitely will not be the last to be able to do something else, to be able to take advantage of the money coming their way on name, image, and likeness. We'll take a break, come back. Longhorn Notebook coming up next, along with another look at the Louisiana Raging Cajuns, the number 20 team, the first team in our Horn Top 20, that countdown which begins today. We'll do that when we come back on Light the Tower, on the Horn, live, local, and digital, on the Horn app and at hornfm.com.
B&E.
I try to really eat healthy, like that
Taco Bell,
like that,
the border.
That milkshake in the middle of the day I had, strawberry milkshake that I paid for dearly last night. She probably paid for it, too. Didn't know it, but yeah. It wasn't fun underneath those covers. Guarantee you.
Lactose intolerant.
Oh,
guy.
Man. My stomach was... I moved the bottom of the covers last night. Oh, I knew there was one
enough,
that it like...
Enough.
Brrr,
come on,
the covers.
Rudy Tootie Fresh and Rudy.
Mornings from 6 till 10 on the Horn.
Rolling along, hour number two, Light the Tower on the Horn. Live, local, and digital on the Horn app and at hornfm.com. Jeff House, Snoop Daniel, no Craig Way in the day. Craig will be back next Monday as he ends his vacation, but we motor along on a busy week. In case you're missing at the Sam Ellinger-related news, Carson Wentz needs foot surgery. He's out 5 to 12 weeks. The Colts did sign Brett Hundley over the weekend, but Jacob Eason is QB1 for the Colts right now, and Sam Ellinger QB2, and expect, Frank Reich has already said, expect to see a lot of Jacob Eason in the preseason because he needs the reps. But hey, Sam Ellinger is going to get a pretty decent amount of preseason run that he otherwise might not have gotten. So,
destiny.
Yeah, maybe. Who knows? But hey, at the very least, by the way, do you see Sam's back wearing the number 4 now, Snoop?
I did.
Yeah.
Good for him.
I forgot. I forgot how well that single digit looks on Sam Ellinger. Going back to the West.
That's so crazy. Do you remember Levi Jones, Robert Jones' son?
Oh, yes.
Okay, so when Sam and Levi were going into eighth grade, they had this picture, you know, Westlake, because they squad up and they go to school forever together. And I just remember this kid next to Levi had tree trunks for legs. I'm like, who is that? And lo and behold, he's, you know, Sam Ellinger. It's just crazy to watch somebody grow up from like a snot-nosed kid to an NFL quarterback. It's crazy.
I do want to get into some NFL stuff because The Athletic released one of my favorite articles that comes out every year. They released their quarterback tiers in the National Football League. So I do want to get to that before we wrap up. So let's go ahead, Snoop, right now and get to the notebook.
Jeff Howe's Longhorn Notebook, brought to you by Cedar Park Overhead Doors. Go to cptours.com.
Throughout the week, I'll keep talking about Texas football from the standpoint of looking at camp battles, which camp battles are really going to stand out. So we talked about quarterback, we talked about wide receiver, one I have talked about ad nauseum this summer, one I have not talked about probably as much as I should have, but we're about to really find out that quarterback battle. It's going in from, what's the proper terminology here, going from the frying pan to the fryer. Like, both those guys, they have been swimming along, but the water's about to get a lot rougher, a lot deeper, as Casey Thompson and Hudson Card battle for QB1, that job on September 4th in the season opener against Louisiana. So we'll continue to look at other position battles as we go through in camp. And in my opinion, maybe the most wide, I don't think, this is my opinion, but I think what I'm saying is fact, the most wide open position battle in camp is going to be for that second inside linebacker spot next to DeMarvion Overshown. We've talked about David Benda coming off of a really big spring. Jalen Ford got a start last year. Luke Brockermeyer, a former walk-on, now a scholarship guy, his name has come up a lot as a guy that could push for playing time at middle linebacker, or according to what a team source told Horns 24/7, or at least as a guy who will push whoever starts off with playing time. He's gaining respect. Deli Adeyewe, who went into the portal, wasn't around the team all spring, has been back for the summer. He's got a chance to go win that job. They brought in Devin Richardson as a transfer from New Mexico State. He's got a chance to be a guy there. So, I have no earthly idea who's going to be your other starting inside linebacker for that Louisiana game, other than DeMarvion Overshown, who's next to him. I don't know. I think that thing is wide open. And that's a position where I think Pete Kwiatkowski's got some flexibility based on opponents. Like, you know, you're going to need to make yourself flexible enough to where you're not starting a guy against Oklahoma or, you know, Texas Tech with Sonny Cumbie going to be Matt Wells' offensive coordinator, leaving TCU, going back to Lubbock, and them being more of an air raid team. You don't need to get yourself in a position where you're starting middle linebacker, where you've just got him on the field just because he is your starting middle linebacker, but against a space and pace offense, like we saw at times with Juwan Mitchell, until towards the end of the year last year, Juwan Mitchell started to get better. But you can't be in a position where you've got that guy on the field and he's somebody that the opposing offense can just attack time and time again and becomes almost a liability for you. You've got to leave yourself some flexibility at that position. Where, you know, one of the scenarios I threw out there, if you're facing an offense that's more wide open, do Pete Kwiatkowski and Jeff Choate coaching linebackers, and even throw Terry Joseph and Blake Gideon into this conversation since we're talking about a secondary position, do they maybe take a guy like Chris Adamora and, based on the opponent, decide, hey, Chris Adamora, we're better off having Chris Adamora and Anthony Cook on the field. So, Anthony Cook, you'll be in the nickel. Chris Adamora, you're going to actually be our starting, air quotes, middle linebacker, even though you're not what a traditional middle linebacker looks like. So, I just think keeping the options open, but, you know, or maybe, I mean, maybe David Benda, a guy like David Benda can take that job, grab the bull by the horns, win that job, and be a guy that can be a three-down player. But I don't know. As it stands right now, I think it's more likely that Pete Kwiatkowski and Jeff Choate keep their options open, and based on the opponent, based on, you know, what the opponent does and in terms of both scheme and personnel, just don't pigeonhole yourself and put yourself in a position to be able to defend multiple offenses with the personnel you've got at that middle linebacker spot. So that job, again, Luke Brockermeyer, David Benda, Jalen Ford, Devin Richardson, Deli Adeyewe, heck, I don't know, even maybe throw a guy like Jaden Hullaby in there for all we know. Like, that's just five or six guys I mentioned that could be, that are all vying for that one spot. So that competition is going to be something to watch at inside linebacker in Pete Kwiatkowski's defense in Jeff Choate's room. Obviously, we know DeMarvion Overshown. Even though Overshown, he is coming off of a spring where he wasn't able to practice due to the shoulder surgery. So keep an eye on those two inside linebacker groups. You know, it's interesting. Like, Todd Orlando's defense was way too reliant on, and I even remember times where T.O. openly said this, like, their defense was going to go as the two inside linebackers were going to go. And when he had Gary Johnson and Malik Jefferson, guys that went to the combine and just ran eye-popping times, then Malik Jefferson ran, what, 4.5, 4.5-3, 4.5-2. Gary Johnson was 4.4-3. and the 42 of the faster linebackers at the combine that we've seen in the last 5 to 10 years. Yeah, when you had those guys, and Malik Jefferson played at an All-American level, he was a second-team All-American his last year at Texas. Yeah, when you had those guys, yeah, you could do a lot of work, and your defense was really good. It also helped when you had, you know, Puna Ford, who, as we've seen, is a really good guy in an odd front to have playing over the ball, and you know, Holton Hill and Chris Boyd, two guys that have been starting corners in the NFL. Yeah, you had a lot of pieces to work with. A young Brandon Jones back at safety. Deshaun Elliott was a finalist for the Thorpe Award that year and a consensus All-American. So you had really good talent around those two linebackers. But that was the best it got for Todd Orlando at that linebacker position. And then you go to 2019, ultimately Todd Orlando's demise, and you had times where you had Dele Adeoye and Juwan Mitchell on the field together. Man, in a space and pace league like the Big 12, especially at that point with as many teams that were running space and pace offenses, you know, Cliff Kingsbury got out of the league the year before. That was Dana Holgerson's last year in the league. So we've seen that kind of scale back a little bit. But, man, there are too many really good offensive coordinators in this league that they are going to exploit that, and they will figure out the best matchups to make you pay for having too heavy personnel on the field. And that's exactly what happened with both of those guys on the field. So I don't want to see this defense under Pete Kwiatkowski be so dependent on one position that if the personnel at that position is inadequate, it completely throws off the rest of your scheme. What's interesting, though, is where I think the one area to compensate with that for that is, how can Pete Kwiatkowski and Bo Davis maximize the pieces that are there on the defensive line? And we talk about all the time about Alfred Collins, a guy that Snoop Daniel has already gone on record and saying is going to be a number one pick in the NFL draft. We talk a lot about Alfred Collins. Keandre Coburn, to use a Rod Babers term, he's that rock of Gibraltar, just that steady force in the middle of your defense. But what else is there? You've got Tavondre Sweat, who played really well last year, coming off of the shoulder surgery. Keep in mind, as good as that D-line was in the spring, we didn't see Tavondre Sweat because he was recovering. And then you've got Moro Ojomo, and kind of rework your mind, Longhorn fans. Think back to the spring game, and how good Moro Ojomo looked. Now, in the spring game, you always run into the issue of, okay, is that guy just good, or are there offensive line issues? And you can certainly go through that debate in your head. But Moro Ojomo, according to what sources told Horns 24/7 at the end of summer workouts, he was one of the stars on the defensive line, quote, with his attitude and his work ethic, and followed up a productive spring with a productive summer. This is what a team source told Horns 24/7 about Moro Ojomo. And keep in mind, like, when he signed, we knew he was young, but this just puts it further into perspective how young this guy is, even though he was a 2018 signee. Quote, he's really just getting into prime physical shape since he was so young when he was in high school. He doesn't turn 20 until after fall camp starts. So he's been on campus since 2018. So this is his fourth year in the program, but he'll be into camp between the time camp starts and the time the Louisiana game gets here. That's when Moro Ojomo is going to have his 20th birthday. So you've got a guy that still is just now getting into his physical prime. So if it all comes together for Moro Ojomo, you know, I'm not so sure Pete Kwiatkowski shouldn't. And then we know the good thing about Pete Kwiatkowski is he's really flexible. Man, does he just take one of those hybrid end positions and just stick Moro Ojomo there because that's one of your best 11 guys and you've just got to find a place to put him on the field? You know, Jacoby Jones, I don't really consider Jacoby Jones with the D-line since he's already moved to one of those hybrid positions at outside linebacker / defensive end. But, man, we know Pete Kwiatkowski at Washington was really kind of a two-down guy with two hybrid stand-up ends. Maybe you've just got to be... I know Texas fans don't want to hear it, but it'll look a little different than Todd Orlando's did. Maybe you've got to just have three true down defensive linemen on the field if three of your best 11 are Collins, Coburn, and Ojomo. And certainly Vernon Broughton's going to get his reps. And I just mentioned Tavondre Sweat's going to get his reps. And Sawyer Gorham Welch is a guy that we saw more of in the spring. So the strength of your team, going back to the inside linebacker talk and kind of the – it's not really a conundrum. It's just a chance for Pete Kwiatkowski and Jeff Choate to get creative. That potential issue you've got at inside linebacker, that could be alleviated if you've got a plan on how to maximize all the talent you've got on your interior within your interior defensive line, which I don't think there's any question. You can throw a running back into that conversation. I think interior defensive line, it is your deepest and most talented position group within this program in Morrow. Ojemo is coming off of a great summer. Oh, and by the way, Byron Murphy has continued to draw praise, the true freshman out of DeSoto. So we've got another DeSoto guy in the Texas program. He's continued to garner praise as a, quote, worker with explosiveness. And similar to the Xavier Worthy conversation with Byron Murphy, according to a team source, can't wait to see him in pads because he grabs your attention. That's kind of what you want true freshmen to do, flash and then hope that those flashes are still there once the pads come on. So that's so we talked about quarterback, wide receiver, and interior defensive line slash really defensive front as we look at some of the better position battles going on in camp for the Longhorns when practice gets going on Friday. Reporting day on Thursday, the first practice of the Longhorns under Steve Sarkisian going to take place on Friday. But before we go to our last break, we got a little more business to get to.
When you put that uniform on, you better come to work.
It's the Horn Top 20, brought to you by Allstat Beer. No impurities, no regrets. Number 20, the Louisiana Ragin' Cajuns.
Billy Napier is bringing a team to DKR on September 4th to face the Longhorns in a season opener that Phil Steele, and I love Phil Steele's college football preview, Phil Steele says the following of Louisiana. Billy Napier has gotten to the Sun Belt title game each of his first 3 years and would like to break through and win it all this year. The Cajuns have 20 returning starters and get a key home game against Appalachian State at home in October, which could have them hosting the Sun Belt title game. They upset number 9 Iowa State on the road in the opener last year, and if they knock off another Big 12 foe on the road to open this year, it could be a remarkable season. They're my clear favorite to win the West. And again, similar to what I said in the first hour, because of the relationship between Sark and Billy Napier, they were both on the Alabama staff together in 2016, because the Ragin' Cajuns went to Ames and they put it on Iowa State. Yeah, they had a couple of special teams touchdowns, but again, the way they finished that game, just pounding the rock right at Iowa State, I kept thinking, man, Iowa State's going to get a stop at some point, right? Like, they're going to run out of time, and eventually, yeah, Louisiana was just able to run out the clock and kind of choked the life out of Iowa State at the end of that ball game. So you take into account Sark's relationship with Billy Napier, the fact that that's a team that went into Ames last year and beat a really good Iowa State team. And then you take into account the fact that they're bringing back 20 starters from a team that went 10-1 last year, finished in the top 25, won their bowl game. This is a team that, look, Texas should win this game. I don't think there's any question about that, but you're going to have to work a little bit. And as long as the Longhorns understand right now what they're up against, and Sark has driven that point home. Anytime he's talked about schedule, he knows what that opener is going to look like. There shouldn't be any reason why Louisiana catches Texas by surprise, and there's no reason for Texas to be unprepared mentally going into this game thinking they could just roll out and go beat Louisiana. That's not the case. This is a really good team. Yes, it's a Sun Belt team. Yes, Texas is a more talented team, but this is a team that's going to make Texas work a little bit. And again, just kind of going back to big picture, anytime anybody's asked me about expectations for Texas, what do you think the record's going to be? My response has kind of been, let's see where they are after the first two games. If they can beat Louisiana and go to Fayetteville and conquer that environment and beat Arkansas, I think you're looking at a team that could win 9 games in the regular season, because those are two really good tests to start the year. It starts September 4th with the home game against an experienced, talented, really good Louisiana team coming into DKR for the opener. And the Ragin' Cajuns are number 20, the first team to appear in our Horn Top 20 countdown. I want to take a break right now because I want to get to this story in The Athletic on quarterback tiers in the National Football League. This is my favorite piece The Athletic puts out every year on the NFL front. They do a lot of good work at The Athletic, but I love, love, love when they go into quarterback tiers. So I want to get to that. So let's go ahead and take a break right now. We'll come back. We'll close out this edition of Light the Tower on the other side with quarterback tiers and, I don't know, anything else Snoop might have cooking up in his brain. We'll do that when we come back on Light the Tower on the Horn, live, local, and digital on the Horn app and at hornfm.com. Am I crazy for thinking that Late Registration is still Kanye's best album?
It's what made him. Who he is now, he's a different person.
It's like that first album. Usually an artist's first album is their best album because that's like your life work.
Yeah.
That goes into it. And then after that, it's like every year and a half to 2 years, can you bottle something else and put out another album? So, I don't know.
He's been through so many different stages of who he is, like personally, between the kids and the marriages and his relationship with the higher power or whatever.
There's only a handful of albums, Snoop, that this has ever happened to me. I didn't fast forward. I listened to it start to finish and was like, it felt life-changing almost. Yeah. Like, man, I just heard something my ears were not, and my musical soul was not prepared to digest when I heard that for the first time.
And this song was made after he almost lost his life in a car wreck. So, no. Anyway.
Back here.
That can happen every year, you know.
Exactly. Your life's work can't be summed up into every album. Mm-hmm. Usually only that first one. All right. Back here on Light the Tower on the Horn, live, local, and digital on the Horn app at hornfm.com. Jeff House, Snoop Daniel. We've got to close out this edition of the show. But before we do that, The Athletic came out last week, Snoop, with their ranking of quarterback tiers in the National Football League. It's basically Mike Sando of The Athletic heads this up, and it's basically a balloting by 50 NFL coaches and executives cast their ballots, and this is the eighth edition that they've done with these. So before I get to the tiers and the quarterbacks in the tiers, their story today was looking at the biggest risers and fallers among the tiers. Now, I won't go into guys. There are some guys like Baker Mayfield rose a little bit in the balloting, but he didn't switch tiers. And Lamar Jackson fell a little bit in the balloting, but he didn't switch tiers. These are the guys that switch tiers, okay? Your biggest risers and fallers in this survey that The Athletic does of ranking quarterbacks in the National Football League. And I'll get to what the tiers are in a second and give you the quarterbacks in those tiers. And Snoop, you follow the National Football League, so feel free to discuss. Your biggest risers this year, Josh Allen going from tier 3 to tier 2. Tom Brady, and again, this is voted on by coaches and executives in the NFL. It's a 50 person ballot. Allen going from tier 3 to tier 2. Tom Brady goes from tier 2 to tier 1 after winning a Super Bowl. Ryan Tannehill from tier 3 to tier 2. And Kyler Murray from tier 3 to tier 2. The biggest fallers. Cam Newton goes from tier 3 to tier 4. And there's only 4 tiers. Carson Wentz, who we talked about a lot on the show today because of the Sam Ellinger tie-in, goes from tier 2 to tier 3. Ben Roethlisberger from tier 2 to tier 3. Teddy Bridgewater goes from tier 3 to tier 4, now with the Denver Broncos. And Sam Darnold, who's replacing Teddy Bridgewater in Carolina, goes from tier 3 to tier 4. Did you get all that, Snoop?
There needs to be a tier 5.
All right.
I believe some of those 4s, there's some 4s better than, I don't know.
All right.
There needs to be 5 tiers.
Are you ready? Are you ready for your quarterbacks in tier 1, Snoop? So tier 1, a tier 1 quarterback can carry his team each week. The team wins because of him. He expertly handles pressure passing situations. He has no real holes in his game. Tier 1 tied for first, Aaron Rodgers with 50 votes. Patrick Mahomes with 50 votes on the ballot. Coming at number 3, Tom Brady. Russell Wilson at number 4. Deshaun Watson at number 5.
Yes.
Those are you've got 5 tier 1 quarterbacks: Rodgers, Brady, Russell Wilson, Patrick Mahomes, Deshaun Watson.
I'm glad they didn't punish Deshaun for his legal stuff.
Yeah, that's
he is really good.
If you take that off and you can't cast it aside because it is part of his football future. You take that out of the equation, there's no question he's a tier 1 quarterback. I just wonder, since you do have to factor that in, since it directly relates to whether he's going to be available or not, he was 5th out of 5 in this is the Athletic survey. Tier 1 votes, he got 26, 23 tier 2 votes. He actually got 1 vote for tier 3. He was a tier 1 quarterback in 2020, by the way. So there are your 5 quarterbacks in tier 1.
It's so hard to get a tier 1. That's what makes it heartbreaking for Deshaun to be, anyway.
Tier 2. A tier 2 quarterback can carry his team sometimes, but not as consistently. He can handle pure passing situations in doses and or possesses other dimensions that are special enough to elevate him above tier 3. He has a hole or two in his game. Your tier 2 quarterbacks: Josh Allen at number 6. Lamar Jackson tied for 7th. We got Lamar Jackson and Matthew Stafford. Dak Prescott is on tier two, tied at number nine, with Justin Herbert coming up into tier two. Matt Ryan, still a tier two quarterback, according to these evaluators.
Okay.
Kyler Murray, we mentioned, going up to tier two. Ryan Tannehill was another guy who got elevated into tier two. How about Joe Burrow into tier two? Those are the two guys, like Herbert and Burrow. At least Herbert, you got a year where he was offensive rookie of the year and had a great year. Burrow with the knee injury, I guess there were coaches and evaluators that saw enough in that sample size to put Joe Burrow as a tier two quarterback. But those are the only two I would really question. And it's not just because I'm a Cowboys fan, Snoop. Like, I watched and saw how good Dak Prescott was before he got hurt last year. Like, he was on, like, a Tom Brady 2007, Dan Marino 1984, like one of those kind of years before the injury happened. And the Cowboys, I don't think there's any question, with Dak Prescott at quarterback, the Cowboys have an elite offense. Dak Prescott only got one tier one vote, 41 tier two votes. I want to know the eight people that voted for Dak Prescott to be in tier three. I'd like to know who you thought were better quarterbacks than that. So that's tier two. Tier three. A tier three quarter. So anybody you had a problem with there, Snoop? And
Well, I mean, Dak needs to be above Matt Ryan.
He is. Yeah,
okay.
Matt Ryan was 11. Dak Prescott was tied for 9.
Okay, just checking.
All right, real quick. Tier three. A tier three quarterback is a legitimate starter but needs a heavier running game and or defensive component to win. A lower volume drop back passing offense suits him best. Your tier three quarterbacks. And I would probably put, maybe not Herbert. I can make an argument for Herbert in tier two. I'd probably put Burrow in tier three. But your tier three quarterbacks, Derek Carr, Ben Roethlisberger, Baker Mayfield. I can make a better argument for Baker Mayfield in tier two than I probably can Joe Burrow right now. Kirk Cousins, Jared Goff, Carson Wentz, Jimmy Garoppolo, Daniel Jones, and I'm going in order based on how they were voted in, Ryan Fitzpatrick are in tier three. Tier three seem to be either young guys you don't know about yet or veterans that are on the slide and trying to hang on. And then your tier four guys, the tier four quarterback could be an unproven player with some upside or a veteran who is ultimately best suited as a backup. And again, these are ranking the 32 starters at, we're at 24. Sam Darnold, Jameis Winston, Teddy Bridgewater, Cam Newton down at 27, Andy Dalton at 28, Tua Tagovailoa at 29, Jalen Hurts at 30, Drew Locke at 31, and Tyrod Taylor at number 32. So there you have it. There are your quarterbacks ranked in tiers. We'll get into more of that tomorrow, but I just want to throw that out there for discussion. I'm always fascinated by that, yeah, that look that The Athletic does every year at the quarterbacks in the National Football League. We are done for today. Chad and Trey coming up next with Shirts and Skins. However you listened, wherever you listened, we just thank you so much for enjoying another edition of the show today. For the absent Craig Way, for Snoop Daniel, I am Jeff Howe. We will be back again tomorrow to light the tower on the Horn, live, local, and digital on the Horn app and at hornfm.com.